Hi, this is Rick Emerson, and the following encore of Legion of News is brought to you by Squires Electric. Whether it's electrical wiring, Ethernet wiring, or wiring of any kind at all in your home or business, Squires Electric can make your life easier. Find out more at squireselectric.com or call 503-252-1609. Squires Electric.
Greetings, fellow Portlanders. From the Emerson News Network, this is Legion of News!
From high atop the milk packing district in the heart of beautiful southeast Portland, Oregon, this, my friends, is Legion of News, a one-hour distillation of all important knowledge from everywhere. My name is Rick Emerson alongside Don Taylor, who is, even now as I speak these words to you, preparing information on a vast swath of happenings, including, but not limited to, the following.
Sarah Palin's tour bus is vandalized. Mayor Adams wants sex change benefits to be part of Portland workers' health care benefits.
Ooh.
And shoplifters steal wheels of cheese from Whole Foods.
As always, my friends, have no doubt that this conglomeration of factual discourse and ideological screed will render you shocked, amazed, enraptured, and demonstrably more intelligent than when you began this hour. And now, without further ado, brace yourselves! For this is Legion of News.
Good afternoon. I'm Dawn Taylor, and this is absolutely everything you need to know for, what day is this? Thursday, June 2nd, 2011.
It's Dawn Taylor at the news desk.
Yes.
By the way.
Police say the occupants of two vehicles were involved in a gunfight before they crashed near Southeast 164th Avenue and Southeast Division early yesterday morning. Investigators say earlier in the morning, a group of people got into an argument at a bar near Southeast 188th and Stark. That argument led to a short car chase that ended in a crash on Division Street. About 2:30 a.m., police received 911 calls of speeding cars and gunfire. Investigators say shots may have been fired during the chase. Gunshell casings were also found at the scene of the crash. Police did not find any gunshot victims at the scene.
Do you suppose there's just a macro for speeding cars and gunfire? You know, like if you're in Southeast Portland, you call the cops and they go, what is it? And you go, speeding cars. And they go, yeah, gunfire. Great. And they just hit like control F, you know, or three. And it just, you know, just loads it in.
Or it's just 2:30 in the morning. And you say, oh, where are you calling? Southeast 180. Yeah.
Great.
Yeah,
we'll send guys with billy clubs. That's wonderful. Great.
Drivers of both vehicles remained on the scene and are cooperating with the police. Other occupants left the area before the officers arrived.
Is that why they're saying left the area?
Yes.
Not fled like...
Skedaddled?
Not fled like the scurrilous roaches they almost certainly are. You are listening to Legion of News here at Cascadia.fm. Thank you for joining us. It is Thursday, June 2nd, 2011. Coming up later on this hour, you got your entertainment news, also science on the march. Don't forget, you can get this program as a direct MP3 download later on right here at Cascadia.fm or at legionofnews.com. It's also available via iTunes, and you can take it with you on your mobile device as well, your handheld device, your smartphone, your whatever. That is at mobile.cascadia.fm, mobile.cascadia.fm. .fm, and then the next hour at rickemersonshow.com. The Rick Emerson radio program will be gracing your ear holes. Am I gracing? I mean, really, it's sort of an aural assault. It's sort of a... Well, here's
bombarding?
The thing. It's that Dawn, hold your ears down. And then I just jam my entertainment into them without regard for your own desires or whims.
I might sweet talk you a little bit, but really.
Dawn's the one who threatens to kill a puppy if you tell anyone. That's coming up next hour at RickEmersonShow.com, where we'll be joined by our good friend Mr. Keelan King. He's going to be in the studio to talk about his upcoming release, Star Pilot's Lament. Also, do we have watches?
We do. We once again have a Taser watch and a Monkey watch.
It's the same. You didn't have to change anything.
I didn't have to change anything. Oddly enough, we are on a roll with the Tasers and the Monkeys.
The universe just working out for you. That's coming up next hour at RickEmersonShow.com. And this is Legion of News at Cascadia.fm.
Mayor Sam Adams wants to include sexual reassignment surgery as one of the plans offered to Portland City employees. Opponents said it will cost taxpayers thousands of dollars, but the idea may be gaining support. The additional cost each year for the city to add sexual reassignment surgery to its health care plan is $32,302, which is a 0.08% increase out of the $41 million the city already spends on health care. Gina Frazzini, the executive director of Basic Rights Oregon, said, "It's a much smaller piece of the pool of benefits that are provided to employees, but critically significant for transgender folks." Frazzini worked with Mayor Adams for over a year crafting the ordinance. She said he came to her after Multnomah County adopted the same health care benefits last year.
Wait, I'm confused. So Multnomah County, this is for what, though?
It's for city employees. City employees.
Oh, I see. Okay, it's not Portland. Right. Not Portland, the city. Multnomah, the county.
Frazzini said, "We are talking about medically necessary care that folks with their physician have decided are the right course for them. The American Medical Association identified years ago that all transgender health care is medically necessary. The AMA went on to say no public or private health insurance should deny coverage." At least one Portland City Council member agrees. Commissioner Amanda Fritz said, "As a former nurse, I believe medical decisions should be made between the doctor and the patient, and the insurance company shouldn't be getting in the middle of who can have what kind of procedures. I think this is a step in the right direction."
Did she then cackle and pull a squirrel out of her purse and just pet it while staring agog at everybody in the audience?
I don't know, but whoever wrote this story, I don't think liked her very much because they misspelled her name. They said Commissioner Amanada Fritz, which I think was a character on Babylon 5.
Never mind, I don't care. I was going to make an observation about the linguistics of the phrase gender reassignment surgery, which just seems like it's more of that like ridiculous softening of the language. Just call it a sex change.
Yeah.
Gender reassignment makes it sound like it's not really your choice. Like you're going to the office and I got to go, you're going to be a dude for the next 3 weeks, then you're going to be hermaphrodite, then back to being a dude, then a chick again. And you know.
It always sounds to me like it's purely like a paperwork matter.
Seriously, like they checked the wrong box or something.
Yeah.
I mean, they just call it.
Oh, we need to reassign you.
I think it's because they're trying to make it more acceptable by calling it a sex reassignment surgery, which just obfuscates the issue.
No.
So that's just ridiculous.
We know what it is, and people who don't like the idea of it still don't like it if you change the name.
Really not going to do any good.
Yeah.
All right. Here's Don Taylor at the news desk.
House Republicans say there was some general agreement about the national debt, but mostly a lot of listening to each other at their group meeting with President Obama this week. House Budget Chair Paul Ryan came out of the meeting stressing that both sides must keep a tone of respect.
"If we demagogue each other at the leadership level, then we're never going to take on our debt. We have a debt crisis coming. We want to deal with this."
If we demagogue each other?
I don't think you can actually use that as a verb unless you're Paul Ryan, in which case you apparently can, and I for one support that.
Right.
I'm going to start doing that all the time. I'm going to verb it up with that just for the rest of the day.
We got to start just demagoguing folks here at Legion of News.
Start. Yeah, we're going to begin that. That's going to be a thing we undertake.
I've been demagoguing you ever since we first started.
Yeah, seriously.
That's how I got my job, frankly. Afterward, Republican Kevin McCarthy said the president agreed with some key ideas.
No, I'm sorry. I always do that. Sorry, it's the wrong button. Wrong McCarthy.
That made me happy.
I'm sorry, hold on. That's
what I heard from this president,
there we go.
That he wanted
sounds
to sit
better.
Down and find real cuts now. He said there needed to be entitlement reform.
Okay. Well, that's less interesting, but probably more accurate. You're listening to Legion of News here at Cascadia.fm. Thank you for joining us. It is Thursday, June 2nd, 2011. Here is Don Taylor.
Fresh off her Times Square Pizza Summit with Donald Trump, Sarah Palin...
Are they really calling it that?
Yes, they are.
Is it Pizza Summit. Is it capitalized all the way through?
Her Times Square Pizza Summit.
Okay.
Trademark. Yeah. His new reality show in the fall. Times Square Pizza Summit with Donald Trump. Sarah Palin carried on with her tour of the Big Apple on Wednesday, paying visits to such treasured landmarks as Ellis Island and the Statue of Liberty. Though Palin was greeted with handshakes and smiles from local admirers, her visit to New York wasn't immune to some hometown detractors. While Palin and company met with the top brass at Fox News headquarters in Midtown, an unknown vandal managed to tag the former Alaska governor's patriotic-themed One Nation tour bus. The media whore, read a handwritten poster plastered on the side of the bus, already donning an oversized We the People preamble.
What did it say?
Well, I guess they pasted it over where it said We the People with a homemade sign that said I the media whore.
Oh, I see. Okay.
And then a website called, and I am not making this up, Rump Roast, posted several of the photos on its site yesterday.
I think maybe the domains have all been taken at this point.
The sign managed to stay on the bus for a reported 15 minutes before being removed by a Palin aide. Although she hasn't made any official announcement yet, many believe Palin's much-talked-about bus tour to the country's historic sites is possibly maybe sort of a kickoff to maybe sort of running for president.
That's just stupid. Sticking a sticker on her bus that says media whore is just dumb. I mean, that really does it. It does a disservice to creative crime everywhere and to interesting defacement of property. I mean, really, that's not like a page out of the Abby Hoffman handbook or anything.
No, and if it's something that can just be peeled right back off, that's not even really vandalism.
No, I mean, it's like the cream pie thing is even more interesting than that. You know, the cream pie thing is sort of, you know, at least that's got a rich comedic history to it. You know, that's got roots reaching all the way back to vaudeville and the Borscht Belt and beyond. Whereas this, you're just some jagoff. You're like that guy that, you know, feels the need to stick like the animal testing thing on every stop sign, in my neighborhood. You just knock it off. You just stop doing that, huh? Why don't we stop that, friend? By the way, and I didn't see this, but apparently Jon Stewart did a whole thing about how Trump ate his pizza with a fork. Which I am known to do occasionally, but then again, I'm not a New Yorker. So, you know, I can't imagine that she has a lot of support in New York anyway. It seems like that may not be a real stronghold for her.
No, and it's hard to imagine that she and Donald Trump were really talking about anything important. Mostly they were probably just sitting there cackling to each other gleefully about, like, how much attention they've gotten for not running for president.
Yeah, well, and don't you imagine that because I think that he was, you know, he had sort of taken some shots at her over the last couple of years, and I think she's actually tossed some brickbats, as they say, his way. But I would imagine, as you just said, really, in the grand scheme of things, when they're sitting down, that's just a whole lot of cackling at the rubes who continue to just fork over money to them, which is fine. If you can, as Dr. Dre would say, a fool and his dough soon split, Don.
So did he say that?
Yes. So if you get with a fool, you get all that you can get.
Those are wise words.
It really is. No. Covered in fire ants. Here's Don Taylor at the news desk.
Brazen shoplifters rolled out of the Bend, Oregon Whole Foods store on Tuesday with a wheel of Gouda, which is actually supposed to be pronounced like howdah, but nobody does, and two wheels of blue cheese. The wheels of cheese had actually been boxed for two women who stole the cheese. They put the wheels of cheese in a shopping cart in the wine section of the store and left, one of them stopping briefly at the checkout register.
Did you really say they rolled out with wheels of cheese?
Yes,
okay.
I did.
All right, just checking.
I didn't.
All right.
No.
Uh-huh.
The cheeses had an estimated value of nearly $600, the one wheel of Gouda alone being worth $300.
It's like you just lay these things out. Let me ask you this. Do you design some of these stories and then just lace them with like linguistic punji steaks, waiting to see if I will step into them in my nearly irresistible urge to pun?
No,
is that why you do this?
No, actually what happens is I see them, I think they look, I scan them to see if they look somewhat readable. And at like 8 o'clock in the morning while I'm on my first cup of coffee, I print them out
okay.
So that I can read them later. And then I don't realize
and then you don't think about
that someone at like KPTV or KGW or wherever was trying to be clever.
Okay. All right. I'm going to resist. Like the first three puns that came to mind, I'm not going to make. That is for lesser shows and broadcasters. We will eschew those.
There's some kind of a Steelers wheel joke in there, isn't there, since they stole them?
And when you said that they were, what is it, like $600 or something?
Yeah.
There's also a Cheeses.
Yeah.
That's expensive, you know,
right.
And I wasn't going to do that either. I'm doing it now just for illustrative purposes.
Jesus Christ. No.
I wanted to do this Cheeses of Nazareth thing for Christmas, and it's like I was never able to find a way to actually make that work.
You work on that.
Okay.
Shopper and woman on the street, Kelly Shipman, called KTVZ-TV in Bend. It is weird. I guess it's a sad reflection on what's going on in our community right now.
Yes, the increase in cheese theft, that's really the marker. That's the canary in the societal coal mine for us.
And another shopper opined that perhaps this must be...
Okay, they didn't opine.
No, I...
Where is this at?
Bend.
People in Bend don't opine.
Well, okay. According to the story, she just said...
People in Bend just sort of jaw at you.
I just like using the word opine.
Okay, all right.
But she said she thought the episode must be theft with a mixture of a prank because she wondered who could possibly need that much cheese.
So there's some sort of a canapé crisis happening in one of the tonier parts of town, and they just didn't have... There was just no time to go through the proper cheese channels for these things.
There was no ATM handy, and so, we're just going to have to steal all of the cheese for our Merlot party.
Well, there's no machine that dispenses cheese, and that really is a thing that I'm going to remedy when I become president, by the way. There's going to be cheese dispensaries on every corner. You're going to go up, you stick your card in, and then it just extrudes cheese at you like some sort of edible dairy-based Play-Doh.
Is that on the list, like, after Taco Tuesdays for everyone?
No. Taco Tuesday is first. No, both... There's an overture, which is the imprisonment and then liquefaction of my enemies. And that is... But for which, by the way, I will recruit the stew maker, who is, even as we speak, sitting in prison awaiting my command. That'll be followed by then Taco Tuesday. And then, of course, there will be September. And then we're going to have cheese dispensing machines everywhere. Because if you think about it, most of your cheeses, I mean, they're ready to be spat out at you by a machine anyway. Like, you get those like the Kraft slices. Those things can come out of an ATM like today. You probably wouldn't have to retrofit anything. They're ready to be dispensed.
Yeah, we talked at length about the little Laughing Cow baby bells.
That's what
those
I'm saying.
Those are perfect for some kind of a cheese dispensing machine.
Like in those
machine.
Things where it just dumps your change out on the bottom, you could get little Laughing Cow wedges or the little circular baby bell things. Or, again, you could just, how about this? Or it's like those trashy supermarkets where you take in... And this is a thing that I guess maybe only existed in Washington, because you and Jim's, Willig seem to not have ever witnessed these. But it was for rubes, basically. It was for my family, where it's like you would just take this 2-liter bottle it wasn't a Walmart, but whatever we had at the time, like some sort of a poor white trash supermarket, where you go in and you refill your 2-liter bottle of soda for like 12 cents or something, in case you couldn't spring for the whole 75 cents. But then you just take some sort of cheese container and you go and just screw it onto the front of the machine and you fill her up, please.
Yeah, like every time.
Fills it with pub cheese.
My thing of pub cheese is empty. I could just take my pub cheese container. Get more pub cheese.
See, early on, when I was starting this little riff here, everybody said, well, that's amusing. I guess there's some humor to be had here, Rick, but this isn't really a practical idea, nor is it a thing that I would want. Aha. Aha. Who's wrong now? So I'm telling you right now, if Sam Adams just got on TV and said, look, you put me back in office, cheese dispensers on every corner. You know, 3 flavors minimum. That'd put him in office for life.
You know, you should really offer your services to him as some kind of a campaign director.
It's amazing that people don't take me up on these offers.
Former Massachusetts Governor Mitt Romney joins the field of candidates for the 2012 Republican presidential nomination. He kicked off his campaign at a farm in the key primary state of New Hampshire. He told a crowd of supporters a change of direction is imperative.
Okay, sons of bitches.
No one is saying new direction anymore.
I hate you all. Die. Not die literally, because I wish a long life and the best of health to all of our elected officials and candidates. It's a dyed in the wool change. What they have done with the wool is to dye it and to move away from saying new direction, which, by the way, has been a source of mirth and merriment for people for 3, 4, 5 years now.
Yeah.
And so I think it's cruel and callous and unwarranted that it be taken away from people now more than ever when Americans need to laugh. Politicians choose now, this time, to quit saying new directions. Sons of bitches.
I wonder if we could get Sam Adams to just keep saying, you know, he's going in a new direction or he needs a new direction. So if we offered to
donate
a certain amount of money to his campaign.
I'm not even really sure you'd have to donate money. Let's be honest.
We just asked him nicely.
Probably donate your time. Well, maybe not you.
Yeah, maybe not.
Right. What are we, or is this Romney won?
Romney's talking about his new direction. Right.
Today we're united not only by our faith and belief in America, we're also united by our concern for America. This country we love is in peril. And that, my friends, is one reason why we're here today.
Wow, what a dynamic speaker he is.
He actually is relatively personable, though. I mean, compared to a lot of the Republican candidates, the possible candidates.
Well, he's not like 1,000 years old, for one thing.
Yeah, and he speaks well. He presents himself well. He's one of those guys that he seems like he'd probably be a nice guy, even though you know that he's fundamentally evil.
No, I don't even know that he's necessarily evil. I just think that he's probably bland. He probably just had... The thing about him, Mitt Romney, in my assessment, I don't really know. He doesn't seem actually evil. I mean, Dick Cheney is actually evil. The thing about Mitt Romney is he just sort of seems to be a void. He just seems to be, there just seems to be a lot of nothing there. I mean, he kind of, you know, and it's weird, actually. I was just talking to my wife about this morning. We were in the kitchen talking, because I was asking her about, she's going back to goddamn Utah here in a while to spend time with her family. But we were talking, you know, I said, oh, because he declared today, and I was like, oh, are your parents like over the moon about Mitt Romney? And she said, oh, yeah, they love him because, you know, Mormon, blah, blah, blah. And I said, well, only half kidding. I said, don't they view him as being, you know, like a member of the East Coast elite? And she said, well, why? And I said, well, because first of all, he's a billionaire for New England, which I think by definition means that he is an East Coast elite. And they, you know, and they said that no, they liked him because he had strong moral principles. Anyway, we was having this whole discussion about how, you know, he was like for the longest time, like a pro-choice governor. And then he became pro-life when he decided to run for president. He was for the longest time in favor of the government running health care and then decided to be against it when he decided to run for president. So he just seems to have no moral compass or barometer at all. He's just like a hairdo. He kind of looks like this. He looks like. Sometimes you'll say that I will occasionally say that people look like a political cartoon caricature of themselves. He doesn't look like that. He looks like the real life version, and Bruce Campbell is like the political caricature. Like, if Bruce Campbell looked normal, he would look like Mitt Romney, I think.
Well, Romney says he's well qualified for the presidency.
Now, all those experiences, starting and running businesses for 25 years, turning around the Olympics, governing a state, have helped shape who I am and how it is I lead.
He kind of has this sort of powdered toast man thing going on.
A little bit. He says he will do a better job.
I can tell you, I've learned from the successes and from the failures. Turning around a crisis takes experience and bold action. And for millions of Americans, the economy is in crisis today. And unless we change course, it'll be in crisis for all of us tomorrow.
Doesn't he seem like a guy that gets you in a room and tries to sell you on Herbalife?
Yeah, or a timeshare.
Yeah, one of those, you know, what if I told you that you could stay in this house for just pennies a day? You know what I mean? While you're just like feeling all skeeved out and wanting to run for the door and Clorox yourself.
And the waves of his cologne are wafting towards you.
Seriously, you know that he is like a wash in Vitalis, too, like all the time. All right.
Yeah. A team of neighbors and firefighters worked together to save a horse from a muddy creek in rural Yamhill County on Wednesday. Neighbors on Olson Road joined 10 Gaston. We have a lot of stories from Gaston.
It's like the third one in 2 days we've had.
I think one of our local news outlets must have like partnered with the Gaston Gazette or something, and now they're getting
product placement,
getting stuff every single day. Anyway, neighbors joined 10 Gaston Rural Fire District crews in wrapping fire hoses around the trapped horse to safely pull it from a creek. The horse survived the ordeal and was being treated by a veterinarian within an hour of the initial 911 call. The Gaston Fire District is called for a horse rescue about once a year. While the department doesn't train for these rescues, many crew members, including Chief Roger Messenbrink, already know what to do if it happens. Gaston Fire District spokesman Ken Bilderback said, "Some of our folks are so skilled at this sort of thing, they just know what to do without hurting the horse."
What was the nature of the horse's distress?
It got caught in a muddy creek, and it couldn't get out.
Okay. Well, all right. I have nothing snarky to say about
that. So they wrapped fire hoses around it and saved it.
Horses just, I think I speak for a lot of people when I say that, I think this is a human thing, that horses just seem like big dogs. You know, that's sort of the way, I think the way that most of us view horses, and so as a result, you know, that's one of those things where, you know, like I should probably snark about it, but it's just not in me, Don.
No. Not quite as smart, though. Horses are very, very stupid.
I don't know. They can count.
They can, and they can. You can train them to take orders and commands and things. But really, they're not. They're not.
Can't
real
even
smart.
Get my wife to do that, Don.
Wow.
Hey now.
Hey.
All right. I can't even bring myself to play the whole rim shot.
No.
It's just like I just do the first, and I just, that's enough. That's all I can do. My dog eats thumbtacks though, so it's like it's not really, you know. Oh, and by the way, my wife and I are compiling a list, sort of like a USA Today infographic. You know, one of those like. You know, who's eating a lot of margarine? You know, and then it's just like a sort of, you know, like a pie chart or something. We're trying to make a comprehensive list of things that Philo has run away from.
Oh, yes.
This morning, by the way, added to the list, a closed can of Viso that was sitting on the floor, not moving or being touched by anyone. he was like running into the office. Like, I think he was asleep, or he was taking a nap in the bedroom or something. But he suddenly woke up and he was running through the house. I'm so excited. I forgot that I lived here. It's so great. Oh, who are you? Oh, that's right. You're my owner. And he's just, you know, so dumb and happy about everything. Ran into the office to say hello to me. And then I had a can of Viso sitting on the ground by my feet because I was going to stick it in my bag to bring it here to work. And he ran into the office and then did that thing of like skidding to a halt on all fours. And then like stared at the can for a second, a little goggle-eyed, and then turned around and ran away.
Oh, poor
awesome.
Philo.
So there you go. One more on the list. Here's Don Taylor.
Congressman Anthony Weiner insists he did not post a lewd photo that appeared for a short time over the weekend on his Twitter account. Weiner blames hackers.
Hackers?
Noah Schachtman with Wired Magazine says identifying the hacker could be difficult, if not impossible.
It could be complicated to figure out, depending on what method the hacker used. I don't know if it would take years and years, but it might be never, actually.
He might have actually used the cunning I don't actually exist gambit, which really is that's a thing that defeats even the strongest investigative techniques.
And apparently I was reading something last night that it didn't even require anything called hacking.
No.
That there are very simple ways that you can just log into someone's account and do something.
It's like sitting down at the computer right after they leave.
Yeah. On the claim of hacking, Schachtman says it would have been easy to do.
These social networks in general, and Twitter in particular, are built to be hacked. They're built to be open. They're built to share. They're built to play well with other programs. And all of those things make them very easy to hack.
Somewhere, Kevin Mitnick is just rolling his eyes at this flagrant dilution and debasement of the English language.
Yes.
Hacking. Which I think is distinct from cracking, but maybe not. I don't know.
It is.
That's some sort of a thing that... That's a thing that there was a distinction, and then it was like as soon as Katie Hafner just started like cranking out books around it, you know, in like the mid-1990s, then immediately there was like all of the distinction just vanished.
Just logging into something and doing something is not actually
hacking. It's like calling yourself a jewel thief or like a cat burglar because like a guy leaves his door open. It doesn't really work. Yeah.
Let's do our science news.
Here's your Science in the March, brought to you by Squires Electric. Find out more about them by going to squireselectric.com or 503-252-1609. That is their telephone number. You can also find them at facebook.com/squireselectric. That is facebook.com/. By the way, can I just interrupt this whole this thing where I'm doing and talking about a deal? Have you seen like the new round of Blake Lively photos that have come out?
No, I still have not seen that.
They're quite something. And I got to tell you, that's a girl who was assembled by someone very close to the architect himself, I believe. Or sections of her, anyway. I mean, you know, or possibly somebody at Johns Hopkins. I'm not sure. But really, there's a whole new rafter that's coming. But did you see, here's why, and I know you're doing that squinty thing like, yes, Rick, that's really interesting. And I mean, in your head, you're like doing a grocery list for later.
A little bit, yeah.
Here's why you, see, but listen, now, it's not like I just peddle, you know, swill at people all day. I mean, I do, but it's useful swill. Here's why you care. Because there's a lulls aspect to it now.
Okay.
Which you are totally oblivious to because you think, Blake Lively's breasts, why do I care about that? Because of lulls, Don, as with everything. So we'll tell you more about it later.
Okay.
That story coming up next hour. This, though, is Science in the March, brought to you by Squires Electric. Again, find out more about them by going to squireselectric.com or facebook.com/squireselectric, where you can read some testimonials from, I mean, listeners and also just non-listeners, people across the fruited plain who've used Squires Electric to come to their home or business and to take care of the installation, the upgrade, the repair, whatever it has to do with wires or wiring in your home or your business, or whether it's your business at home. They can make sure that it's done right the first time, and economically. Find them at SquiresElectric.com. They're the proud sponsors of this, your Science on the March.
NASA test-fired Morpheus, a new NASA lander that is still in development. Yesterday at the Johnson Space Center, they test-fired it on a grassy plain during drought conditions and caused a 15-acre grass fire.
Who could have seen that coming?
It came within 150 yards of a woman's home. She said, I was amazed. I thought it was going to take our houses because it was so close. She said, her name is Katie Taylor, she said she's lived on the other side of Johnson Space Center's fence for 10 years, but this was the first time this has ever actually happened. A May 4th test in the same location went as planned. Morpheus is a NASA-designed vehicle large enough to carry as much as 1,100 pounds of equipment to the moon, but on Wednesday, its thrusters ignited dried grass overtaken by drought conditions. While burn bans are in place in county areas, Clear Lake by the Johnson Space Center isn't one of them. NASA spokeswoman Brandi Dean said, We knew there was a possibility that a grass fire would start, and we had fire personnel on site with us watching it, and just were ready to call for help if we needed it.
Okay.
Apparently 15 acres of fire was not enough to, like, concern them in any way.
It's just intriguing to me that they couldn't see the probable outcome of this was somehow shrouded in their minds. They didn't really see this going down the inevitable path that we all would have predicted.
Yeah, it turned out that the fire personnel present were inadequate and ill-equipped.
Excellent.
And that six different surrounding city fire departments had to be called in.
That's fantastic.
Katie Taylor, the woman on the street who lives nearby, said, and, you know, I have to agree with her on this, maybe they should have wet it down first if they were going to do that.
No, then we would have been denied amusement, Don. Then it's we who would have lost out on lulls. So, really, I mean, for all of us here in Portland at Legion News, I think we can say thank you.
The world's deepest dwelling multicellular organisms have been identified, according to a paper in the latest issue of Nature. If you were to dig down about 2.2 miles, you might encounter Halicephalobus mephisto and its other nematode relatives. Food at such a depth consists of bacteria. Temperatures are unbearably hot. For the nematodes, who are non-segmented worms measuring up to 0.2 inches long, the situation must be fine because they have evolved asexual reproduction and live there just fine.
So they're like the shakers of the nematode world.
Yes, right. Exactly.
By the
like
way,
them.
I don't think if something lives there, I think the temperature cannot be called unbearably hot.
Well, maybe for us it would be unbearably hot. Not for the nematodes, though.
Should we just take I was going to ask if we should take a vote, but I know how that would go. You and I should just take like a week at some point. We should take a week off from caring about how the English language is used. Because I feel like that's just going to give us, like, I'm going to have a stroke one of these days, you know?
Yeah.
Like, I'm going to hear some guy just calling something, like, really unique, and it's like my head's just going to explode.
Yeah, I was watching Game of Thrones this last week, and Sean Bean's character said about something that, you know, he could care less. And I said, couldn't! And Patrick just leaned over and, like, patted me on the leg.
Well, like, the Freakonomics guys say that sometimes. Stephen Dubner says could care less, which I understand is just a dialectical thing. But, I mean, still.
Yeah, and it's becoming, and I think it's one of those things that's sort of like the less fewer thing. It's becoming colloquially accepted, even though it's logically incorrect. So, but yes, you and I get a little bit overly outraged about such things.
A little bit.
So, there is a, I'm trying to figure out the best way to read this story.
Maybe it's by turning it face down in the pile and not reading it.
Well, an artificial microbrain has been created that consists of about 40 to 60 rat neurons and is capable of sustaining 12 neuronal seconds of network activity, and it's being grown in a petri dish.
I don't understand.
Basically, a few scientists are attempting to grow an active brain in a petri dish.
Right.
From rat neurons.
12 neuronal processes? Seconds?
Yes.
What does that mean?
That means it can think for 12 seconds.
Does it basically just go, where am I? And then it turns off?
Right.
I need lunch. Off.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's pretty much it. The University of Pittsburgh researchers behind the project were able to create something really unique.
Really? Does it actually say that?
No, just wanted to say that.
All right.
To cultivate the microbrain, Henry D. C. Zerang and his colleagues took a silicon disc and stamped it with a layer of adhesive proteins. After the proteins had cultured and dried, brain cells from embryonic rats were fused to the proteins and given time to grow and connect, forming a natural ring-shaped network capable of transmitting and receiving electrical signals. By stimulating the neurons with an electrical pulse, the researchers found the pulse could surge around the microbrain for 12 seconds, which was 11.75 seconds longer than the team had anticipated. They figured they'd get like a quarter of a second.
Was there like a Vegas line on how long the microbrain was going to be able to sustain thought? Was there like an over-under
or something
on it, apparently?
There was probably a pool. There was a pool in the lab.
Some guy has to buy donuts for a week.
The team published in the journal called Lab on a Chip.
Okay.
Persistent activity in the brain is involved in working memory and motor planning. The ability of the brain to hold information online long after initiating stimulus is a hallmark of brain areas such as the prefrontal cortex. The researchers plan to use the microbrain to study how our brains transmit electrical signals and how our neural networks efficiently process and store data.
This just seems like some sort of hell project, though, where there's like a they saved Timothy's brain or something. That was the less obvious secret of NIM.
Well, they're growing brains in the lab, In Japan, they're creating, like, actual skin for robots.
But I mean,
every day, one step closer.
But it's like they grow that. They had to have grown that from something. Like, they had to have had, like, actual, like, essence of rat or something.
Yeah, they took hippocampus cells from
That's what I'm saying. So you got some other rat who's like, well, it's been a good life, and I guess I'm off to the next stage of my karmic evolution now. Maybe I'll be a zebra. Maybe I'll... Where am I? And then he just wakes up and, you know, and then he's in a dish thinking for half a second before he, you know, before he's dead again. That's got to be a weird, like,
well, it's not all of his brain. It was just a couple of cells from his brain.
Yeah, but I mean, but is that enough to transport the rat's consciousness if the rat had consciousness?
I don't know.
And would it be the same would he be stuck? And would he have any sense that time had passed? Would he be in a different time? Hmm. What if he just wake up and go, whatever happened to Sanjaya? And and then just dead, you know? And it would just be, I mean, you have no, it just, this is the sort of thing I can't think about because it just fills my mind with, what is it that Hedley Lamarr says? Careening through a cosmic vapor of invention in my head. I get all these thoughts and there's just nobody to answer them for me, so.
That's all the science.
All right, there you go. Let's end that. I'm not very bright. That's Science on the March here at Squire's Electric. Brought to you by Squire's Electric here at Legion of News, part of Cascadia.fm. And their sterling lineup. You can find out more about Squire's Electric by going to squireselectric.com or going to facebook.com/Squire's Electric or calling 503-252-1609. Don't forget next hour the Rick Emerson radio program with our good friend Mr. Keelan King. He's going to be here talking about his new project, Star Pilots Lament. The listening party for that is this Saturday, and then the release is next Tuesday. He'll be on the Rick Emerson Show next hour. Let's see. And then also Taser Watch coming up, Monkey Watch coming up.
And alert listener Jeff has sent us a wave file that he says is 14 seconds of the original Monkey Watch theme that could be
really
edited and used. Yes.
So I might be able to like loop it or EQ it or something.
Yes.
I might be able to. It's sort of like it, you know what it is? It's like the rat neuronic microbrain of the Monkey Watch world.
Right.
So just from this tiny little strand, from this fragment of DNA, and I can fill in the rest of it with frog DNA. And then it'll all work.
What could go wrong?
Yes, and then everything will be all my problems will be solved. All right, so you're listening to Legion of News here at Cascadia.fm. And by the way, for anybody who's curious, yes, during the break, the musical interlude, the interstitial segment between Legion of News and the Rick Emerson radio program, yes, I will be playing Monster Mac by Sir Mix-a-Lot.
Oh, thank God.
From the album Chief Bootknocker. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Okay. After two bear sightings yesterday alone, animal experts say that we here in Portland should know how to keep ourselves and our home safe from bears.
Mm-hmm.
Animal experts say bears are naturally curious and love to explore, especially for food.
Especially your internal organs.
Amy Cutting, an animal curator at the Oregon Zoo, says if food is scarce, they can travel for miles looking for an opportunity to forage. They're interested in different smells and sights, and they'll just wander through to see what's going on.
Uh-huh.
If they happen to wander through your neighborhood, or if you live in bear country, experts advise bear-proofing your home. That means keeping your food, trash, and pet food secure.
Also moving.
Most problems are caused by people inadvertently feeding bears. Cutting said,
with their internal organs.
Once a bear associates humans with food, then it can become a threat.
Yes.
Securing your food in a bear-resistant or airtight container is recommended, especially when camping.
There's no note how they don't say bear-proof container. There's no bear-proof container. That's like when somebody says your watch is water-resistant, which means like it can take a light misting once from a rainbird before it falls apart.
Animal experts say black bears will avoid human contact in most cases, and they're unlikely to attack unless threatened or provoked. So if you encounter a bear, and it seems to be more and more likely that you might...
Yes.
Never approach it. You're urged to stay inside, you know, snapping pictures of it on your iPhone and twittering about it. But if you happen to be outside in its path, experts advise appearing larger and talk to the bear to make it aware of your presence.
That seems like a bad idea. I would imagine that is a poor strategy. I'm not a bear expert, but...
But you should also move slowly away out of its path and never turn your back or run.
I think really you should just start to reconsider your stance on the deity of your understanding and whether or not you might be moved closer to him almost immediately.
Cutting also urges hikers or campers to carry bear spray,
uh-huh.
which is a very powerful pepper spray that safely works to repel them.
Yeah, all right. That's
bear spray.
So you're either to make eye contact or look away, turn your back or face the bear, make a lot of noise or hide.
be bigger or smaller, or climb a tree, or just stay in one place.
Or maybe you could just, you know, maybe just to make it easier for everybody, you could just begin cutting off pieces of your own body and just handing them to it. That's what you should do. You should be prepared to hack off one of your hands and throw it as like a diversion. Like, who wants the hand? Hey, bear, and then throw it. You know, or just, you know, just you know, like just carry a sack of earlobes or something with you,
and or just go hiking with someone you don't like very much,
or who is slow,
and shove them at the bear.
Maybe if you knew somebody that had bad hips and couldn't walk very fast.
Hey,
I'm just saying. I mean, you know, look, it's a zero. Life is a zero sum game. I'm just, you know, not that we know anybody like that. Yes, no. All right. Somebody just says, appear larger, like Americans have to try to do that. Well done, sir. You're listening to Legion of News here at Cascadia.
What are you supposed to say to the bear, by the way? Talk to the bear, it says it.
Hey, how's it going?
Hey, bear, look at me, I'm really big. I'm getting out of your way now, though. Hey.
Some weather we're having.
Don't eat me, please.
How about those Orioles? Yeah, I don't know.
Two dogs were rescued Wednesday afternoon in Kansas City after being stuck on the roof of a business for nearly 6 days. Last Friday, the dogs got through a fence and made it onto the roof of Bunny's Beauty Supply. Wednesday, Stephanie Henshaw with the rescue group Love Four Paws was able to rescue the first dog easily by 3 p.m., but had troubles rescuing the second dog. The second dog, who was limping badly, took a good deal of coaxing.
How was it that nobody noticed they were on the roof for 6 days?
I don't know. Well,
and how hard could it be to get on the roof? The dogs, if a goddamn dog could do it, how hard is it to get a ladder? Where is this?
Kansas City.
People in Kansas City are dumb.
Are they having tornadoes there? Is this part of a tornado thing?
I don't think they're having tornadoes. Is Kansas City, it's in Missouri,
well,
right?
This is Kansas City, Kansas.
All right, I guess it overlaps or whatever. I don't think they're having tornadoes there. No. I mean, they might be, but still. I mean, but even if they are, it seems like once you see the dog there, you get a stepladder, and you go, here, you know, who wants some bacon? And then the dog is gone, you know?
They got the second dog down by throwing a coat over it and carrying it down a ladder.
Okay, so there you go. All right. You were listening to, you know, it's like that, and I've mentioned this in the past, and people who, I've heard from listeners who grew up in other places, other states, who had similar experiences, and I don't know why. I don't know what it means. This is some sort of universal, it's like a Planck's constant or something. When I was, I don't know, maybe in like third, fourth grade, I would be taking the, you know, I rode the school bus, and it's like the bus would be taking me to school, and we would go through this one neighborhood, and I swear to God, every now and again, I would look up, and there would just be a dog standing on the roof of this house. And I never knew why that was. And I could, and it's like, and it wasn't like I was hallucinating it. Like, this happened several times over the course of like a school year or two. And I would say, look over there. And it's like, of course, without fail, the dog had just like wandered away or whatever. But I would look over and there would just be this white dog with big brown sort of splotchy patches on, sort of sitting on a roof. Didn't seem to be unnerved, kind of wagging his tail, just going, I'm on the roof. And it would just be for no reason. I was never able to figure out the deal. And I told that story for the first time several years ago. I was like, hey, when I was a kid, you know, I would just see this dog on the roof of this house every now and again. And I heard from people, it was like, it's like shoes on telephone lines. People in different parts of the country who said that they also had that experience where they would occasionally just see a dog standing on the roof of a house for no reason. It's all very weird.
Yeah. I mean, we had one of those sort of in our neighborhood, but I knew how the dog got out there. There was, you know, a window and it was sort of an overhang, a porch over their front porch.
Dogs are like this glorious combination of smart and really dense. I mean, they really are. That's what makes them so endlessly amusing. You know, it's like cats are just smart, and so they're no fun. I mean, cats are completely uninteresting because there's no surprise to be had there. You know, with dogs, it's like they're smart. It's like duck, duck, goose, but it's like smart, dumb. Smart, dumb, smart, eating my own poo, dumb. You know, it's just they're sort of a roulette wheel of intelligence. What are you doing over there?
I'm putting a photo in the Dropbox.
Were you just deleting a bunch of my things arbitrarily from the Dropbox?
No, okay. I was deleting just our things from the Dropbox.
Okay, just checking.
So that you wouldn't be confused.
No. I was just asking. I just saw an alert on my screen said things are being deleted. Want to make sure. All right.
Well, we've already used that stuff, so no one cares.
Okay.
So I just gave you a photograph of this guy. An Orlando, Florida man who called himself the Delightful Deviant while wooing a teen girl on the internet.
By wooing, do you mean raping?
No, just wooing.
Okay.
Was sentenced to 15 years in federal prison on Wednesday. German Paz, 33, was arrested last year. Investigators said he began a relationship with his victim, then 13 years old, in 2006, when he met her on a web forum for online video game enthusiasts. Using the handle The Delightful Deviant, he chatted with the minor about a game at first, then engaged her in a sexually explicit conversation, according to the FBI. Paz coached the girl into starting an AOL Instant Messenger account for chatting and into giving him her phone number. Over the next year, agents said he convinced her to send him sexually explicit photos. According to investigators, Paz told the girl not to tell her mother and said he planned to marry her when she turned 18. When he contacted her again in 2010, the girl, then 18, called the FBI.
Well, okay, wait, but he was engaging in sexual conversation and
yes.
getting photos when she was underage.
When she was 13.
Okay, all right. Okay.
And as well, yeah.
For a minute, I was about to say, and, you know, because it was, for a minute it sounded, you know, because I was busy, I was distracted by his creepy mugshot. He looks like, what's his name from, he looks like Tom Araya from Slayer.
Oh, he does.
In a little bit. So he was having her, like, send me a photo of you in your knickers.
Yeah.
13-year-old. Yeah, that's, yeah. Okay, yeah.
So agents interviewed him. He admitted to an online relationship with the girl. A search of his computer revealed images of the victim. Paz has pleaded guilty to sexually exploiting a minor, was sentenced to 15 years in federal prison.
Why is he the delightful diva?
His online name that he gave himself was the delightful deviant.
Oh, deviant, not diva.
No.
Okay, all right. Well, it seems like you can... Well, I mean, I guess you could be a delightful deviant. I suppose it all depends on who's in the receiving end of your deviance.
He doesn't look terribly delightful.
Well, he doesn't look delighted.
No.
I'll put it that way. But then again, I imagine he got beaten up very badly by police officers wielding big nightsticks. So that might explain the rather sullen look on his countenance.
And also, it must be very disappointing to him. He's
been investing time.
He has. And then he actually even promised to marry her when she was 18. She turns 18. What does she do? Turns him into the feds.
Oh, God. Can I just tell you... So you remember... this was on the Rick Emerson show. We were talking about this a couple days ago. I won't... remember I told you about this guy that I used to know. This was years ago when I lived somewhere else. But this guy who... He asked me and this other guy to help him move. And then we found the video camera in his bedroom that had the electrical tape. So if anybody didn't hear this, we're helping this guy move. And he's like, can you come over and help me move my stuff? We're like, okay. And we find this video camera in his bedroom in a box of stuff to move with electrical tape over the red light. And it became clear from asking him about this, it became clear almost immediately that he was just using it to surreptitiously record sexual encounters when he would be with a woman like a big B. He would then film it without them knowing about it. And so he was such a skeeze. And so the other thing is that he was a guy sort of like this. And I should say that to my knowledge, like he never engaged in any sort of actual illegal activity. But it was that creepy thing where like he knew. Like some hot 16-year-old daughter of, like, some friend or just, you know, it was, like, the daughter of, like, a colleague, somebody knew. And it was sort of, like, he would always kind of just be not actually, like, hitting on her as such or flirting, like, in an explicit way, but sort of uncomfortably, sort of jocular, you know, in his. And I think at one point, like, my friend Tim actually asked him, like, hey, what is up with that? And he's like, well, he's like, you know, a tree doesn't grow overnight. You got to water it. And we're just like, you're so gross. You're so hideous. And that was like his whole thing of like just, you know, like just sort of get in there now while they're building the Death Star before the shields go up and she learns how to spot you for the perv you are. You know, get to know her when she's like 15. And then when she turns 18, then you just show up on her front porch with like, you know, something from Pro Flowers and then you're good to go, you know, or whatever. I guess that was his thinking. So he was so gross. He was just so creepy.
And this man was a friend of yours, was he?
He wasn't a friend of mine. I mean, he was one of those guys that, like, you kind of know. He was a guy that I worked with, but, like, not really... I didn't know all that well. He was one of those guys that worked in, like, in a cubicle, and you'd sort of see him, you know, like, often enough. And it's like, there's people you know really well, and there's people you don't know well, but you don't know them well for kind of a lengthy period of time. And so they view it as sort of the same thing, like, in the sum total. Mm. And he's like, hey, can you guys lend me a hand this weekend? I'd really appreciate it. And we're like, fine. Jackass. Like, he just sort of ambushed us with the which I should have been suspicious about in retrospect, that, like, he couldn't find anybody else, and he had to ask, and he didn't even really know us. So, yeah, he was an unnerving individual. All right, here's Don Taylor.
It's time for entertainment news.
All right, let's see. Here's your entertainment news for Thursday, right here at Legion of News.
Octomom Nadia Suleiman's fertility doctor, Dr. Michael Kamrava, has had his medical license revoked. A panel ruled Wednesday that Kamrava did not exercise sound judgment when he implanted Suleiman with 12 embryos, resulting in the live birth of 8 children in January 2009. His license will be revoked effective on July 1st. In addition, the medical board found he was also negligent in his care of two other patients, a 48-year-old woman who had complications after becoming pregnant with quadruplets, and a 42-year-old that got ovarian cancer after going through with fertility treatments. Camarama's lawyer said at a public hearing last month, "Nobody died here. This is a good doctor. I argue that he really has learned his lesson."
Excellent. Yeah.
X-Men First Class actors Michael Fassbender and Zoe Kravitz are dating, reports Us Weekly. The couple were spotted Sunday in New York's West Village having brunch with friends, including Kravitz's ex-boyfriend, actor Ben Foster. Ooh, I like him. "They're really low-key, but they have a great time together, just talking music or movies," said a source.
Mm-hmm.
They really didn't want to be a topic of conversation during the press for X-Men. Kravitz is the daughter of Lenny Kravitz and Lisa Bonet.
Oh, God, I'm so old. Really?
Yes, yes.
All right.
Yes, indeed.
It's like all of those like Lenny Kravitz albums I have at home where he's singing to Zoe and she's like three. Jesus. All right.
TMZ reports that Charlie Sheen and Brooke Mueller have worked out a joint custody agreement. Lawyers for both parties presented a Los Angeles judge with an agreement which reportedly calls for joint physical custody and legal custody of their twin boys, Max and Bob.
What? The name? Look, I don't really care, but can we all let's just say a couple things. First of all, we live in a strange world, right? We live in a world where things are, you know, and I think the stakes have been raised for what counts as bizarre behavior and what counts as, you know, being sort of far afield from traditional societal behaviors and mores. Even now, even in, this is sort of a reflexive thing, even in a post-Charlie Sheen era, what judge gives even partial custody
to Charlie
of
Sheen?
Children? What do you have to do to lose custody of children in this country? Do you have to cook one of them in a stove? I mean, what is it? Seriously. I mean, part of me realizes the fundamental absurdity, but part of me almost it actually really wonders, like, what? How is that possible? How is that possible that Charlie Sheen... Look, it's one thing if he just has kids. He just impregnates some skis, you know, and she just shoves a bunch of kids out later on. What are you going to do? I mean, you could send a SWAT team in. You probably should, but you probably won't. That's one thing. But this is like you already got the kids away. The kids are gone. This is voluntarily going back to the home of Charlie Sheen and saying, "All right, pardon me, are you Charlie Sheen?" "Yes, I am. Winning. Crack. You know, whores. Okay, here's some children for you. That's wonderful. Excellent. Have a nice night." And then leaving. What is up with that?
Well, the thing is, they worked out a joint custody agreement, and she, you know, was like married to him or had his kids or what. I think she was married to him. And wasn't she just recently in rehab herself? So it may have just been one of those things that the judge looked at both of them and went, well, 6-1.
I guess.
As long as you guys are in okay, fine.
But
whatever.
I mean, don't we all know people who are maybe trying to have children or who have, you know, one, think about having another, thinking about maybe adopting somewhere? Here's some kids that could be adopted, like today. Today, I'll foot the bill. I'll get a helicopter to fly there and just, just nab the kids, bring them back to your
people
place.
People who are not crazy and drug-addled?
Seriously, yeah. Nobody be the wiser. I mean, honestly, that is, it's not like I get all exercised about, you know, I don't know. It's not like I really care about most of the stories we talk about, because seriously, I mean, it's, you know, we're just a planet full of jagoffs and retards anyway, so what do I care? What's one more? But I mean, but this is like, seriously, I can't believe I'm saying this, but this is like when you said you could not believe, not that you feel that this should be the case, but you could not believe that there was not more outrage about the Book of Mormon, the musical, and its content, because it's relentlessly profane and sacrilegious and whatever. Do you remember we were all talking about taking, like, Britney Spears' kids away? Because she, like, I don't know, because she smoked in the car or something?
Yeah, what? They didn't have seatbelts on.
We just gave children to Charlie. We went to his home and effectively just handed him children.
Yeah.
And no one seems to be saying, well, hang on a second. Maybe let's sleep on it.
Well, now, granted, it just says lawyers have presented a judge with the joint custody agreement that the two of them worked out. I suppose it's so possible that the judge might look at it and then look at them and then look at it and look at them and then just go, "You're kidding, right?"
Nope, not going to happen. I mean, seriously, if I was that judge, I would just call a press conference like today and just be like, who wants these kids? Like, anybody. Anybody in this room will be more qualified to be a parent than
you, homeless guy in the trash can.
God damn.
Take one of them.
Jesus Christ. Yeah. They could actually, here's what they could do, you know, they ought to find some really, well-off, stable, rich people, and they ought to auction off Charlie Sheen's kids. You know? And then you do, you know, you make sure it's a good home and all, but also, because there's an adoption fee if you adopt kids, you got to fork over money to the state. They ought to just do that as a sort of a fundraiser.
Yeah.
Whatever you would normally pay, it's going to be like 50 times that, and it's going to go to like, I don't know, cancer or something, or the debt, or whatever. Just, you know, potholes. But, you know, in exchange, you get Charlie Sheen's kids, you know, and that's good for a book down the line.
I agree.
I'm just saying. All right, there you go.
So since we have to talk about her every 10 minutes... Blake Lively,
yeah.
Who's been linked recently to Leonardo DiCaprio. Oh, by the way, she's going to be in the Green Lantern. She has a movie coming out, in case you weren't aware of that.
Excellent.
She told Glamour magazine that she loves the single life. I appreciate being alone, said the 24-year-old. People can feel more alone in a relationship than when they're single if they abandon who they are. Every relationship you have, you're learning and growing and taking something from that. So for me, it's never been too dramatic of a thing when something ends. One of her ex-boyfriends is her Gossip Girl co-star, Penn Badgley.
And that's... Penn Badgley is...
He's the guy. He's the
what's his name?
Yeah, the guy from
The dreamy
Brooklyn.
Guy. Yeah.
The Brooklyn guy with the weird overbite.
We interviewed him at one point, like on some version of the show, and it's... Oh, I'm thinking of, you know, because he's in something. He was in, what was that terrible horror film he was in? It was that, was he in What's-Her-Name's Body? What was that movie? Something.
Oh, yeah, Jennifer's Body.
Jennifer's Body. He was in that. He was,
that's right.
Clearly didn't care about it at all, by the way. It was on pimping that clearly could not possibly have cared less about that movie. But they were sort of sticking him out there, like, you know, in the world to talk about it. And so he came on and he sort of played along. And he was, it's great. No, it's really, really wonderful. And then but you know, here's the thing about him.
He was an easy A, which was actually quite amusing.
Well, you know, the thing is, and he's like, the thing about Penn Badgley is he's like a blindingly smart guy. I mean, he's, I don't know if you've ever like seen him interviewed or read an interview with him.
No.
He's like whip smart. I mean, he's like razor smart, like way smarter than you would ever think from just a guy who's on Gossip Girl. He's a little bit like, what's his name from Dawson's Creek? Like Joshua Jackson was a little bit like that, but Penn Badgley was a guy that like, he was smart and he was quick and he was funny and he was a guy. And the thing about interviewing him, and I've only done it once, is that Sarah and I both had the same assessment, which is he's one of those guys, like 30 seconds into the interview, you realize he's so smart that suddenly you realize that like you have to like step up your game because you don't want him to think you're dumb. You want him to come away going, what a polished and intellectually sound group of folks that was at KUFO, which he probably didn't say because, you know, yeah. Obvious. He was a smart guy. And I think smart enough clearly to dump the big ball of crazy, which is her. So, you know. Because she does seem nuts.
Well, yeah.
In this one photograph, it does appear that she's very much doing like a Marilyn Monroe thing, sort of in the mirror in her hotel room.
Well, she's one of those kids too that her dad is like a casting director, or runs a talent agency or something like that, and like three of her siblings are actors as well. I mean, all the kids have been groomed to be.
Are the three siblings also hot and of age?
I don't. Well, I think at least one of them is a boy.
Well,
but
you know,
I don't
any port in a storm, Don.
But yeah, but they were all just sort of being groomed to be actors from the time they were little kids. So
seriously, it's like
and
this.
That's just a breeding ground for crazy.
This one angle here, it's like her breasts are blocking out the sun. They're so large. It really. I have to close this. It's just distracting me. Here's Don Taylor at the news desk.
Gary Sinise, who is co-founder of Operation International Children, announced he was donating 2,560 school supply kits to help children in Haiti. So he said that seeing four children share one pencil in Iraq when he was there on a USO tour in 2003 inspired him to help children with similar needs. He told the Miami Herald, "I was able to see this wonderful interaction between U.S. troops and kids. I came home wanting to help."
I think as the three cups of tea guy has demonstrated, though, you don't actually even need to give things to children. You can just write a book claiming you did it. And then it's basically the same thing.
And Mila Kunis, Jason Bateman, and Chelsea Handler are among the stars set to present at the 2011 MTV Movie Awards, which airs June 5th. Jason Sudeikis will host the show. And because I just can't get enough of this joke. In other news, MTV is still putting on movie awards. Who knew?
All right. You got like 32 seconds if you want to do something.
Jennifer Hudson's going to play a nun in the Farrelly Brothers Three Stooges movie.
Really?
The Stooges themselves will be played by Will Sasso, Sean Hayes, and Chris Diamantopoulos. I don't know who that is.
Okay. Well, there you go. Coming up next hour, it's the Rick Emerson Radio Program. Today we got the Taser Watch, Monkey Watch. Also, our good friend Mr. Keelan King will be in the studio to talk about his new release, Star Pilot's Lament, coming soon to your ears. This is all true. Wait. There we go. Excellent. Fantastic. On that note, by the way, I like to think that we're single-handedly bringing the current affair ka-chung back.
Yeah.
Excellent. There we go. I'm proud to be part of that. It's our contribution to society. So forth. We come to you live each and every weekday from the studios of the Emerson News Network, high above the milk packing district here in glorious Southeast Portland, Oregon. At the news desk, Don Taylor, advanced technology and magic provided by Mr. Thomas Gill, executive producer Bruce Agler, chief of staff Cheryl Kanakoa. The Rick Emerson Show is next at rickemersonshow.com, where you, yes, you, can be entertained for the low, low cost of just 32 cents a day. Don't forget, your first week is free because Rick Emerson loves all of you as sort of a vague collective that he doesn't want to meet, not individually or in reality, but sort of here for the purposes of this conversation. You can find out more at rickemersonshow.com and so forth. This is Legion of News, which you can get later on the day via iTunes or as a direct MP3 download here at Cascadia.fm or legionofnews.com. That is legionofnews.com. We'll see you again tomorrow at noon, and this Friday at noon. Have a safe and satisfying Thursday, won't you?